Would you join with me in prayer? O Lord, you turned ordinary water into wine and brought renewed joy to a feast. Turn the ordinary words we speak and hear today into vessels of your grace and mercy, so that we may know fullness of joy and abundant life. Amen. A religious scholar was at a conference in Hong Kong, and she was running late. As the sun was setting, she caught a water taxi, which sped out over the harbor as it carried her to her destination. Darkness was falling, and it was just her and the pilot of the boat alone on the water. And so the man began to make conversation with her, asking what brought her to Hong Kong. And when he found out that she was a Christian scholar, he looked at her with a serious expression on his face and said, "So, tell me, who is this man, Jesus?" Now, it used to be you had to go all the way around the world to get asked a question like this. Those of you who are older than I am grew up in a world where, by and large, the whole culture worked together to support a particular kind of Christian identity. One of the members of our own church told me that once he got in trouble as a kid for ice skating on a Sunday, there was a police officer, of all people, who rolled up next to his group of friends and from the window of the squad car told them that they really shouldn't be out on a pond on the Sabbath. But that world, with all the good and bad things about it, is gone, isn't it? Within just a few miles of this sanctuary, there are houses of worship for Jews, Sikhs, Hindus, and Muslims. And the fastest growing religious identity of all is a set of folks that claim no religion. We can mourn the loss of what was, but it seems to me that all this change makes for an incredibly exciting time to be a Christian. Because if our faith is making a difference in the way that we live in relationship with our neighbors, in how we spend our time and money, in how we participate in the public life of our communities, there are so many, many opportunities now to be asked, who is this man, Jesus? So this first part of the calendar year is the church season of Epiphany. And Epiphany revolves around the question, who is Jesus? It begins with a shining star that brings foreign visitors. And it ends with Jesus himself transfigured and standing on top of a mountain. And in between those two moments, we get these stories that help us explore who Jesus is and why he came to live among us. So as we read the gospel stories over the next couple of months, just want to encourage you to try and keep those questions in the back of your mind. What does this story reveal? What information does it add to our picture about Jesus and who he is and why he's here? And what does it mean for those of us who follow him, not only those first disciples, but us today? Today's gospel lesson could have been a sitcom episode script. John's gospel is usually very serious, but this is a strangely lighthearted episode. Nobody's in danger of being stoned. Nobody's trying to kill Jesus. Nobody here is sick to the point of death. The only danger is that a wedding party looks like it's going to come to an embarrassing early end because they've run out of wine. Now, that's a genuine problem, especially in a culture like that of Jewish Galilee in the first century, where a public embarrassment like this could haunt your family for generations. But it's different from other challenges that Jesus faces. The stakes here seem very low. We don't know why the wine ran out. The story doesn't tell us. Some people say it was the bridegroom's fault, that he hadn't planned adequately. And other people point out that in first century Jewish communities, it would have been common for the guests themselves to bring wine to the celebration to show their support for the couple and to share the burden of the expenses. So we don't know whose fault it was, but regardless, the wine ran out. And there's this funny scene, a little back and forth between Jesus and his mom. Jesus doesn't want to get involved, and his mother thinks he should. But the servants at the banquet are the quiet heroes of the story. I mean, just look at the way that they do one crazy thing after another, just because Jesus tells them to. There's plenty of work at the banquet, plenty of real work to keep them busy, but Jesus sends them on this crazy errand to fill 6 giant stone jars with water for no apparent good reason. And they just drop everything that they're doing and they follow his instructions. And then, on top of that, when they've done that and they come back, Jesus tells them to draw a ladleful from one of the jars and bring it to the chief steward. Now, he doesn't tell the servants to taste it first. And that means when the servant approaches the chief steward and says, "Hey, boss, here, try some of this," he doesn't know what he's giving him. Maybe it's still water and the boss will bite his head off for messing with him. Or maybe Jesus is some kind of evil magician who just conjured up 6 vats of battery acid. But the servant's trust in Jesus pays off, and the banquet is saved in a big way. I worked this out to 120 gallons of good, rich, high-quality wine. And only they, the servants, together with Jesus, Mary, and the disciples, know the real story of what happened. The conclusion of the story tells us that this was the first of Jesus' signs, and the disciples believed in him. This was a sign that provoked faith, that provoked belief, but a sign of what? If we look back into the Old Testament, we see wine used there as a symbol of God's blessing. Wine comes from grapes. Grapes come from vineyards, which need the sun and the rain and protection from pests. God's protection and blessing flow to Israel when the relationship is good, and therefore the wine flows too. And so for the wine to run out means that the people are left wondering if God is still with them, if the promises God made are still good. When the wine runs out, it brings a crisis of faith. I think we know how it feels when the wine runs out, don't we? I mean, some of our struggles today in trying to figure out, how do we make worship work across the distances? And our struggles with that. That feels wearying. It's like the wine running out. And this late stage of the pandemic has brought weariness in so many ways. I just want things to be normal again. Maybe you do too. But even if the disease were to vanish tomorrow, we'd still be living in a country where political rancor and dysfunction keeps our leaders from addressing other challenges and building up the common good. And I look at yesterday's volcanic eruption in Tonga, sending waves across the Pacific Ocean, and I wonder about what those coastlines will look like in 50 years when my children are grown, and so the scientific community tells us the waterline will already be markedly higher. Add to this the individual burden so many of us are carrying right now, and I think we have a sense of what it feels like for the wine to run out, don't we? Does God have more good in store for us, or is this it? When the wine runs out, when God's blessings seem to be at an ebb, Mary's words for the servers are for us as well. She says, "Do whatever Jesus tells you." And just as with them, the things Jesus asks of us don't always make sense in the moment. "Do not worry about what you will eat or wear," he says. "Love your enemies and do good for them. Forgive, not 7 times, but 70 times 7. To do all these things that Jesus tells us puts us in a vulnerable position, like those servers. It puts us at risk of seeming foolish. But this weekend, as we remember the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his legacy of nonviolent resistance to white supremacy, we have an ongoing historical testimony in the public life of our own country to the ability of those who follow the way of Jesus, those who do whatever he tells us, to transform the world. The promise of our founding as a country, the proposition that all people are created equal, seemed to have run out at certain times in certain places, but a movement of people committed to love, even when they were faced with brutal violence, showed us that the best of our shared life was yet to be, that the best wine had been saved for last. What is Jesus telling you to do? You don't have to be a hero like Dr. King. The everyday relationships and roles that we live and move through bring us opportunities to let go of wrongs done to us, to do good to those who mean us harm, and to step out in faith when it seems like there isn't enough time or money or energy for something that we know in our bones is meant to be. And doesn't Jesus show us that the ordinary stuff of life, water in this case, can be transformed into a rich blessing for a whole community? Your ordinary gifts, ordinary words, ordinary presence blessed by Jesus can become so much more. Those neighbors of ours that I talked about before, the ones who may be asking, who is Jesus? They may never crack open a Bible, but they can read your life and your example. What difference might it make for them to see that for them too, the wine hasn't run out, that the best is yet to come? Fill them up to the brim, Jesus says about the water jars. When he acts, he maximizes the gift. He leaves no room for something more. With the help of those who trust in him, he blesses the gathering with abundance beyond all imagining. So when the wine runs out, as it often does in our own life, may the presence of Jesus give us hope that nonetheless the best is yet to come. May our ordinary gifts yield extraordinary blessings in his hands. And may God fill all of us to the brim with abundant life. Amen.